Thanks very much for tuning in. Later in the program, we'll talk to Kelly Leonard. You know, he comes by from time to time to talk about his podcast, Getting to Yes And. Pretty cool thing. You know, it's an improv game, really, but it's a way through life as well, Getting to Yes And. And we'll talk to him with someone who will talk to us a little bit about millennials, I think, is the program. She's the CEO of a website that has to do with human resources and dealing with millennials. So that's coming up with Kelly Leonard a little bit later in the program. We start on Tuesdays with John Najarian, and you see him on CNBC talking Wall Street. John, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Great to be back with you, Stephen. Thank you, sir.
Dow is up, around 48 points so far this afternoon, fueled by, and what's the news with Walmart? Walmart seems to be the company making the news today.
Yeah, well, they're saying that the online sales have exploded since they bought Jet, J-E-T, and those are the guys behind diapers.com. Some of your listeners no doubt know who that is. Basically, if you can beat Amazon at their own game, which the diapers guys did, and ultimately then sold to Amazon, you can probably figure out e-commerce for a giant like Walmart. They've done that. The sales are just monumental. For a bricks and mortar retailer, they're astonishing. And at their investor day today, Stephen, they talked about having online deliveries from their 1,100 stores by the end of this year, another 1,000 stores by next year, and basically doing what you and I think have discussed, and that is those are distribution centers.
Right.
Any bricks and mortar store should be a distribution center for online. Best Buy's kind of figured that out. Obviously, Walmart has two now, and that makes it a little tougher on Amazon, but certainly it's a great day for Walmart on this news.
Aside from that, I want to get back to Walmart, but at my Whole Foods, they were building a desk for Amazon. Now that Amazon owns Whole Foods, where they will deliver products there, and you can go pick it up and buy some natural peanut butter all at the same time.
Sure, why not?
So Walmart says they expect digital sales to go up 40% next year. Is that the right figure?
That is correct, and I think they're underestimating it because given the amount of internet connectivity the whole country has and the footprint that Walmart enjoys, I think you're going to. I think that's a bar that they're going to actually meet, even though they have grown so dramatically. I think they can grow even faster as they widen this distribution network.
Do you remember a store called Kay's Merchandise Mart?
No, I don't, sir.
Okay. As I recall, Kay's was this. You would go into it, and it was this store, you know, in the mall, and they just had one thing on the shelves, and you would go to them, give them a ticket, and then they had it in the back. It was a warehouse. And it seems to me like we might be moving toward that with stores like Walmart, where you're really going more there to look at products, to gaze at products, but you're going to end up buying them online and then picking them up at the store.
Right. They call it showrooming, I think, or
yeah,
something
right,
like
sure,
that.
Yeah, right, sure, right.
And obviously that had been things that people had done. They wanted to go in and see what's that Vizio TV really like before they just go buy it on Amazon. And now with many of these folks having significant internet presence, as I shouldn't probably leave out Costco, they do as well. I think there's a lot tougher competition for this, and it's probably why a company like Amazon has expanded into grocery and other types of delivery services.
One other thing then, Walmart says they're going to have a stock buyback of, I think I saw $20 million. Is that correct? What's that about?
$20
billion. $20 billion. Yeah, I was
right.
So close.
$20 billion with a B. you're absolutely right. It's a $270 billion company, I believe. So as far as how significant that is, I don't think it's overly significant, but it's definitely a reason that you put more or less an invisible hand under the market. I think, as Alan Greenspan said about the broad market, that invisible hand or that support is certainly going to be there in Walmart.
All right, I had CNBC on and watching it one eye all morning, and they were all over this Procter & Gamble Nelson Peltz story. They talked to Peltz, they talked to the chairman, I think, of Procter & Gamble, where there was this showdown vote today. Can you explain that for me and tell me who came out the winner?
Okay. Assuming it goes as it has gone so far, Mr. Peltz is, of course, an activist investor who wanted to shake things up there. He has supposedly lost. I say supposedly because he's not conceded. He says the vote's too close to call. But nonetheless, I think if I had to guess right now, I'd say Procter & Gamble, I would take them at their word that they have enough votes to hold up their end of the slate of directors, board of directors, and so forth. And that may not, you know, it's kind of be careful what you wish for,
right?
Because the stock had run up on the idea that maybe Peltz could help them unlock some additional value. It topped out at about 95, 96 this year. And in July, the stock was more like $80 or $82. So I'm not saying it goes right back to there, but if Peltz does indeed think that he can't make the impact and walks away, I don't know that this stock holds any of the values where it is right now at approximately 91.
And the establishment at Procter & Gamble did not want Peltz to succeed. Why? What is it they're afraid of when it comes to him? Or what did he want to do that would threaten them?
They usually, most firms, not just Procter & Gamble, when an activist gets involved, they start more or less trying to make it sound like Wall Street, like,
right.
Oh, you're just here to wreck the company. In particular, a guy like Peltz really isn't there to wreck the company. His track record is he sticks with these investments for a long time, and he actually helps companies like Wendy's, is a great example, I think, do a better job and focus on what they need to, maybe having a different set of eyes, and not just a person like me who might talk about it on TV, but my ownership stake isn't in the billions like Mr. Peltz.
Let's go to...
So when he's committing that, it's a bigger... He's swinging a bigger bat.
All right, let's go to the airlines then, because I see that airline stocks were up today, particularly Chicago-based United was doing well.
Fantastic, yeah. United cut capacity by about 3% year over year. People worry that they lose their discipline, Stephen, the airlines, because in the past, historically, they have done just that. They add new planes too fast, and thus they have overcapacity. United and American and JetBlue and Delta have sort of fought against that urge to put on more capacity, and obviously virtually every plane is full. So that's what they're talking about. They're saying margins are going up. And I'm happy that fares are still reasonable in most of the cities that I fly to, but this probably means we're going to be seeing some inflation in those airfares over the next several months.
I mean, it's just a good lesson to keep your head, right? Because United Airlines went through such a bad PR period, you know, when they were dragging people off the planes and all of that, and it looked like, you know, the sky was falling, and here they are doing just fine.
Yep, and I think that... Either the very day or very soon after that, when they hauled the doctor off the plane from Chicago to Louisville, you and I were saying, you know, how bad it is for United, but the best part is that Warren Buffett owns the stock, and he's not selling,
right.
He's buying. So he has held on to that stake. He's been rewarded for it. I still like the airlines here.
All right, John Najarian, what do you like today? What are you watching?
Today we were buying Dish Network. If you pull up a chart on DISH, you'll see that this is one of those stocks that has not had a great 2017, but people are betting on pretty good upside, so we followed the fast money into this. We'll probably hold it for 3 to 6 months.
That's John Najarian. Thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it. Good to talk to you.
Likewise. Thank you, Stephen.
We'll do it again next Tuesday. You can follow John on Twitter, at John Najarian. Of course, watch him on CNBC as well. Tuesday afternoon, a very different-looking day than it was yesterday. The wind will be blowing in at Wrigley Field, a little dreary, maybe some rain. But here to brighten your day is the senior editor at DNA Info Chicago, Andrew Herman.
I'm like a ray of sunshine.
You, even in the darkest days, my friend. Andrew comes by to talk about openings and closings. You can read the stories at dnainfo.com. And so I want to talk first. I was just reading about this Asian grocery store, H.
Yeah.
Which is opening in Greektown.
West Loop at 711 West Jackson. And it specializes in Korean and other Asian food, and it's called H-Mart, and the H comes from a Korean phrase I will not repeat.
Oh, come on.
Han Ah Room, oh, which means perfect. One arm full of groceries.
Which I love, right?
So isn't that a great name?
It is. So, you know, I don't know if they're, well, you're not going to stock up there. You're going to come out with one arm full of groceries.
I guess so. Well, that's how it started. So in 1982, a Korean immigrant, he opened his first corner store in Queens, New York. You know, it was a very small store, but now they're quite big, and he has 50 across the country, and this would be his first in the city.
First in the city, but fifth in the area. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of interesting to me that that he hit the suburbs first. Maybe it's not interesting to me. I don't know. The story says there are about 61,000 Korean Americans in the area. Maybe they're more suburban based than city.
Well, so his other stores are in Glenview, Niles, Naperville, and Schaumburg, and they've said that they're interested in this West Loop store in order to service the Asian students at UIC.
Yeah, right.
So he knows that there's a market there for people, you know, wishing that they could have some of their the mooncakes like mom used to make back in Korea, I guess.
When I read the story or saw the story and the location, I was thinking of proximity to Chinatown, because we've talked about how Chinatown mm-hmm. is, you know, very much a Chinese population,
right.
Which is not Korean.
Right.
But then I was surprised to read, no, he's going after the students at UIC.
Yeah, yeah. So surprisingly enough, Chicago is the fifth largest Korean community in the
right.
country, with New York leading the pack there. But
so if you had to choose kimchi or a fish ball, which do you go for?
You know, I'm into these moon cakes.
Are you?
They're round bakery products, and they have red beans or lotus seed paste. And they use salted duck eggs to make them. And I don't know if that sounds good or not. But
no, wait, are you into it because you're reading it or have you had them?
I'm interested because I'm reading it.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm not that adventurous in my eating, I'm afraid, Steve.
I could go for a mooncake, I think. I don't think a fish ball interests me.
Dried squid?
Dried squid, no, I don't think so. Not
Neither.
Even if you rehydrate it. Okay, so that's H. And it's the sort of thing where if you know, right, people are walking by the storefront. They're like, when? We think it's going to open by the end
fall.
Of the year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, from there to, well, that's a very nice sweater vest you have.
Thank you.
Is that yours?
It's only about 30 years old.
would you rent it out if someone asked?
I don't think anybody had asked.
I don't either, Andrew. But
I will. Would you like to rent it?
No, I don't think so. I have one just like it that's 28 years old.
We all dress alike.
Man, it's easy. Designer Share is this company that started. I think I might have talked about this company in the past. I'm not sure. Mm. But she is sort of a go-between between women with the closet full of clothes and women who need a dress for the night.
Right. So she is Sarah Perkins. And when she was in college, she was always lending dresses to friends. And then so when she got out of college, she decided to launch this company. It's been around for about 6 months. And basically you can rent out your clothes. If you have a lot of clothes,
right.
you can rent them out.
So she's got 500 users, and she said only 10% are renters, are people with clothes.
Right.
Well, they all have clothes.
Right.
But 50...
Most people are renters, not renting out their clothes.
Right, so 50 of the 500 are renting out their clothes.
Yeah.
The rest are taking in clothes.
So they have 600 pieces, and you can look at it on their website, and the cost is basically you get the dress for 1 week for 10% of what the retail cost would be. The company dry cleans it, and they deliver it, and they keep 25% of the
price. So you get, and the idea is to charge for rent about 10% of what you paid for the dress.
Yeah.
So it's a way to dress up for the holidays or a way to bring in some little side gig if you got a closet full of clothes.
And they say, it's interesting, she says that there's much more scrutiny placed on women's appearances. That's why they only have women's clothes. And is there even an argument there on
that one?
I think
it's easier for men to dress.
For us to dress.
Well, we got a pants and a shirt, right? I could wear with this.
All the buttons and zippers are in the front.
with this pair of pants, anyone could dress. With this pair of pants, I could wear 20 different shirts, whereas women are more outfit.
You don't even own 20 different shirts.
I do. I'm going to start a business. Andrew
okay.
Herman, nice to see you.
All right.
Read more at Chicago at DNA Chicago, dnainfo.com/Chicago. Suzanne Muchen is in the studio, the co-host of The Big Payoff, podcast you could hear at WGMplus.com and elsewhere. The Mincing Rascals, my other favorite podcast,
uh-huh.
was featured in the Chicago Podcast Festival.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that photo of you guys.
With
cool.
Kelly Leonard. Kelly's coming in next. So maybe next year I'll put your name in.
Oh, thanks, Steve. You know what else I'd like you to put my name in for?
The Nobel Prize. So I sent this to you because you didn't even see it, but the Nobel Committee... It was pointed out that for 2 years in a row now, there has not been a woman Nobel laureate. And so they say they're going to work on that.
Here's the sad part. I had seen it, And it was, it's become so normalized to me to go, yeah, 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 again, no women, that it didn't outrage me until I started to read about it. And then I got angry because the response from the committee was, oh, we're aware of the problem and we have a 5 to 10 year plan to address it.
Well,
really?
What's their plan or what are they going to do?
Unclear.
What should they do?
What should they do is create...
I just had so many thoughts that would have gotten me in so much trouble.
No, well, let's just go to the real question you just asked. What should they do? This is the same question we always ask around STEM and women in tech. We have to establish, is there a pipeline? I mean, is the problem that there truly are not women...
But that's not their problem.
You don't think... Wait, hold on. You don't think we need to start with the question of whether or not there are deserving women that they're simply bypassing? I think that's a valid question.
Yeah, but that's not the same as the pipeline. If there's no one in the pipeline,
we have a separate solution.
That's not the Nobel Committee's problem.
Correct, but I'm saying that is a 5 to 10 year plan. If they come forward and say, "Look, to be quite honest, we did not recognize a large group of women," then we have to go to the pipeline problem. But if there were women who were deserving, I have to ask the question: is there not any lens on this prize that's taking into account the importance of diversity? And then, of course, you're going to say, should that matter?
Well, I do wonder about that. I mean, right, if they can identify people who might have won, that's a whole different
issue. Whole different thing.
So that's coming from it from a different direction, from the bottom up, if you will. But if from the top down, the committee says, good golly, we need more women, let's pick a few next year, I think that's terrible.
I agree. You can't in any way change the standard.
It's got to be something special, something that you're trying to set examples for.
Of course.
I mean, one of the biggest, most criticized choices they made was Barack Obama a few years ago, which was made to make a point, not necessarily for accomplishment.
Yes. The one interesting fact is that of the 6 committees, 3 did have women on the committee. So we can't say, oh, this is just a problem that there are no women judges. That's not the case.
Women seem to win, and I don't have these numbers, for the Peace Prize more than anything.
For the Peace Prize, which I guess... We could read into that quite a bit.
I interviewed Jody Williams a few years ago, who won in 97 for the landmines.
Yeah.
Mother Teresa has won. Mm-hmm.
Marie Curie.
Who? I'm just kidding.
Did you see how I looked at you?
I did, I know.
That's like when you say you didn't know any Beyonce songs.
The way you looked at me was very telling because you thought it might have been true.
Just like when I thought it was true, you couldn't name a Beyonce song.
Okay, so we have so much to talk about this week, and I don't know which direction to go. Let's do the Harvey Weinstein thing.
Let's just do it.
All right. So
get right into it.
Is it Vanity? Someone's reporting today. Was it the Vanity Fair article that you're quoted in?
So there was a Vanity Fair article. It's everywhere. I was quoted yesterday asking in answer to a specific question, which was, do we think there's too much media coverage
about this particular story?
About this particular
How
story.
How can someone say yes?
That there's too much
coverage?
Yeah,
do you think there might be?
No, I think that at this point, we're in a real corrective moment because the problem is we have a president who has been caught on tape demeaning women and not only didn't suffer any consequences, but was rewarded with the presidency.
Right.
So I think there's a real hunger from not just women, but I think anyone who holds higher standards around how women should be treated, that we do recognize when men in power are doing things that are harmful to women.
It's funny because I didn't think of Trump as president. I thought of Cosby as president.
Well, Cosby is sort of an extreme end of a very media juicy story, like, you know, an OJ story that captures our hearts and minds because we loved that person and he was beloved. No, I don't think Harvey Weinstein was a beloved character.
Everyone, and that's the thing about it. I mean, he was pretty much agreed to have been just a SOB kind of thing, right?
I could come up with other words if we weren't on WGN.
And so it's kind of funny that it took this long and now more stories, more physical, more forceful stories are coming out.
And that's why it should be covered, because I do think that it gives air cover to women who might not otherwise have felt empowered to come forward.
Yeah, no, I agree. I can't believe that the question is being asked, frankly.
I think it's more about, are we focused too much on this man because he's a celebrity, because it's sort of fun to take him down? And for me, it's just about, look, if we had it all over Fox News, we've had it in the tech space. These are all men of a similar set of characteristics, men in positions of power who have the ability to hire women, fire women, and are using that position badly.
Okay, so when you use Dove, do you find that your skin lightens?
You know, that's why I use it.
To lighten your skin?
Oh, my God. So if we have to give some context or people will think we're being horribly inappropriate.
Dove, you know what? And I'm giving them big props for trying because they're always trying.
Trying what? To offend as many women as possible?
They're trying with different body images. They're trying to be progressive out there. But they keep sort of making missteps. And their latest one was this body wash commercial where it's the idea was that this body wash was good for everyone. So it was like the Michael Jackson video where all the faces changed.
Yes.
So you start with an African American woman, she uses the wash, takes off her shirt, and there's a white woman underneath.
Right. Next thing you know, she's white.
And then it transformed to another darker skinned woman.
Correct.
So the idea was that, you know, I'm white, I'm black. Different colors, different women, they all use this.
You're giving them a lot of creds
That's what they wanted to say.
That's their intention.
Right.
Execution is where this failed.
And it failed because?
Because the specific image, especially around the
Facebook
ad. A
black woman becoming white.
A black woman, now she uses Dove, and happily becomes white.
Yeah, but I get that. I get that it was a mistake, but isn't it, don't you have to, my new quote is, being offended is a choice. Make better choices.
Did you just make that up?
No, I think it was Gandhi.
Oh.
No, I don't know. But. But I understand when you look at it through that lens that it was a big fat mistake. But I also think, okay, but you're trying to see it. That was not their intention.
Here's where I agree with you. We have become so sensitized around any possible grievance that could possibly offend. And at this point, there are so many different kinds of people to offend that it's almost a no-win for the advertising world. However, there are certain situations remember the Pepsi commercial with the Kardashian, which was, you know, sort of trying to be a Black Lives Matter. There are moments in which you just have to say, didn't someone in the room raise their hand?
And they were pretty quick to say, yeah, we got this one wrong.
Yeah, and they got this one wrong.
Suzanne Buchan, check out The Big Payoff at WGNplus.com, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Kelly Leonard is in the studio. He's the host of Getting to Yes And, a podcast that you can hear on WGNradio.com. We both were together at the Chicago Podcast Festival at the Old Town School on Saturday.
That was fun.
It was so much fun. I have to say, it's much more fun. Of course, I don't expect anything to be fun, but
sure.
It was a great time, great audience. They were very responsive.
And
you know, I was thinking of your dad, Roy Leonard, for mm-hmm. those who, his progeny really was displayed there in many ways.
Literally
and professionally, I guess. I mean, I certainly was helped greatly and admired and followed your dad, Nick DiGilio, probably even more so.
Sure.
And then you. And those were kind of the three of the podcasts who were there.
Yeah, that's kind of cool to think about.
And another thing, so I don't know personally any Nobel laureates, but it turns out you do.
I do.
How about that?
Yeah, Richard Thaler yesterday. I don't know if folks know this, but Second City has a partnership with the Center for Decision Research at Chicago Booth to study behavioral science through the lens of improvisation. And the guy who greenlit that for us, Richard Thaler.
You know, it's funny because I always look at what these scientists do and I never can get past the description of it. His area of expertise is sort of something that is pretty accessible to knuckleheads like me.
Because
easy to understand.
Because basically, economics was always built on people behaving rationally, and Richard looked at psychology and knowledge and personal experience and said,
"That's not the way.
People don't behave rationally." Yeah. And then figuring out the different ways that they behave irrationally is his expertise.
So does he try to predict irrationality?
Yeah. So you know, the one of the ideas that we talked about recently is this idea around loss aversion, which is the fact that human beings hate having something taken away from them more than they like gaining something.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, you know, and this is sort of like you start thinking about it, like, oh, that's so true. And in improvisation, this is where this meets, is that all these games and these exercises in improv are all built to address things like that.
All right, so let's get to this week's podcast. So yeah. Catherine Minshew is the CEO of The Muse.
Yeah, it's an online job resource. So it's you know, I think some of us, when we had the classified listings, right, and those beginning sort of websites for jobs, this is very different. And it's very catered to, of course, that new generation that's coming into the workplace.
The people who aren't looking for a job to hold for 25, 30 years.
Well, that's funny, right? And you talked about my dad. So my dad worked for GN for 33 years.
I'm on 32.
You're on 32. I'm on 29.
Right.
We don't exist anymore.
No, we do not. No.
So people really are coming into the workplace for a few years or 5 years, and that's okay. It's just different now.
And so I would imagine it's a challenge for employers or for those of us of this generation to accept that from younger workers who aren't doing, to not see it as a sign of disloyalty or disrespect.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the way that a lot of people do see it, is that they don't care. But the fact is, you know, and this is, they get a bad rap because everyone's saying millennials, you know, want ping pong tables. They actually want purpose. They want meaning, and they want to know why they're doing what they're doing. And a lot of businesses don't operate that way.
All right, so she also talked with you about LinkedIn and how to use it.
Yeah, so this was – I really love this because I know –
because I need the help.
Well, yeah, I did too. So LinkedIn is a really important place if you are looking for work and connecting to people in work. And she basically sort of lays out a whole – in this book that she's got, all these different rules of, like, don't try – it's not transactional. Don't go on there trying to, like, find someone and get a job from them. What you are trying to do is tell a story about yourself, and then you connect with different people so that they're going to see your story. And then if they want to reach out to you, that's how they do it.
So it's more of an organic thing.
Yeah.
It's not a help wanted ad. It's an online community.
It's an online community, and there's also, you can follow thought leaders and start to get an idea for what's important to them. She actually recommends, you know, you should publish. You should write, and through the writing, people are going to find you. And that's what happened with me. I actually went on and I started writing articles because I was very much into this change at Second City, and immediately I attracted all kinds of different people that has been really useful to me.
Writing articles that you posted on your own page?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And others shared that.
Yeah. So I started talking about ways I thought improvisation could connect to business and academia. And lo and behold, those people found me and started actually building business.
And here we are to getting to yes. And Kelly Leonard, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Check out the podcast, WGNRadio.com.